has been set for public hearings. The first matter on our docket this afternoon is ADKT 448 in the matter of Amendment of Supreme Court Rule 118 as to appointment of counsel to protect clients' interest. No one being present in Carson, do we have anyone present in Las Vegas?
Good afternoon, Your Honor.
And for the record?
For the record, Cam Fehrenbach, President of the State Bar. We filed the petition at issue, and the issue here really is to straighten out the procedure when we find ourselves in a practice takeover position. And our hope here is to streamline the process and give a little more predictability and control to the Board of Governors. As things stand now, we found ourselves for the last couple of years in positions where on occasion the district court would order the payment of money in a case, and you know, basically all that was left for us was to follow the order. With the change we have in mind here, it does give the Board of Governors the opportunity to set up procedures with the Office of Bar Counsel so that these cases where practice takeover situations have to be addressed can be administered in an efficient way and a cost-effective way. And that's really the motivation for the rule change.
And noting from the rule that's been attached, the proposed rule, the new section, you have some minor amendments, but the new section is as to privilege.
Right. Oh, I'm sorry. I'd forgotten about that. Yes, we also asked for that privilege because it will then make it, I think, it is a difficult situation when you ask, I mean, any time an attorney is asked to take over a case where another attorney has been handling it, there can be extra risks. And if it's in a situation where we have practice takeover, we believe by having this privilege, it would make it give us a broader a choice of attorneys who would be willing to step in and help us in these situations.
But what about, what do other states do with that? And in regard to, say, an attorney takes over another attorney's practice, but then affirmatively either does or fails to do something that a competent lawyer would do, this rule seems to insulate that from liability. And I'm wondering if that's common in other jurisdictions or if that would be unique to Nevada.
Justice Pickering, I think I'll have to defer to Bar Counsel, who's here with me, to answer that question because I don't know the answer.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. David Clark, Bar Counsel for the State Bar. Other jurisdictions do have the limited privilege. I think if there's a concern that it's overbroad, there can be either limiting language or in the scope of the engagement, saying that you are immune for purposes of being, for lack of a better phrase, a receiver in this regard. Any cases you take on your own at some point then become your own with a separate retention and attorney-client relationship with the client, and maybe that's something that can be worked out in the handbook or in the scope of the rule.
Yeah, it's troubling because read literally, it seems to insulate the lawyer who takes it over from even future acts or omissions, which wouldn't necessarily be appropriate.
Right. Once you get this file and ad infinitum, you have carte blanche on it. So I understand that concern. So there could be some limiting either in the engagement or limiting in the rule to address that.
Any other questions by any of the justices as to Mr. Fehrenbach or Mr. Clark? Do we have anyone else in Las Vegas who wishes to speak as to this issue? If there's no one else, we would close the public hearing as the first matter, ADKT 448, as the Supreme Court Rule 18. The next matter on our agenda this afternoon, ADKT 452, in the matter of the amendment of Supreme Court Rule 40, as to the practice of attorneys not admitted to Nevada to increase the Pro Hoc Vici annual application fee from $500 to $550 under Section 3A sub 3. Do we have someone appearing from the bar as to this matter that wishes to speak?
Yes, Your Honor.
Good afternoon. My name is John Shook. I'm the chair of the Client Security Fund. Cam Fehrenbach has asked me to speak to you about this proposal. What we're looking to do is increase the product VICI fee from 550, from 500 to 550, and to increase the allocation to the Client Security Fund from $50 to $100. Essentially, this is to garner more money for the Client Security Fund. We do expect a shortfall this year in light of a significant number of claims that are currently in our program. With that, I'll take any questions you might have.
We received a letter from Floyd Hale in opposition to this, and he has some concerns as to the requirement as to the mediation arbitration. He also indicates that there's some concerns that have been raised by former, now Senior Justice Rose, Senior Justice Bell, as well as former Judge Gene Porter, Joe Bon Jovi, and Jim Armstrong, as to primarily the mediation, but I'm not aware of whether or not you received a copy of Floyd Hale's letter.
I believe that might be another matter. I'm here for the Client Security Fund increase of the Pro Hac Vici fee.
That's 460, I believe.
Is that in reference to 460 or 452?
He misnumbered his letter. It should have. He put ADKT 452, but it should be 460.
I think that's correct.
You know, I've got one question as to this suggested amendment, the request for the amendment. As it stands now, it's a $500 application fee, and then we're increasing that to $550. Do you know where that puts us as far as application of fees throughout the country?
Your Honor, I do not know that. I understand that someone else, either Bar Counsel or Ken Farmer, may know.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. This is Kim Farmer, Executive Director of the State Bar. I don't have that information with me, but we are one of the higher Pro Hac Vici fees in the country. However, one thing we don't have is reciprocity rules, which makes a big difference in where the attorneys are coming in and how they're coming in. If I can, I have pulled the table. I do have that and can send it to the court once I get back to the office.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Ms. Farmer, this is Justice Hardesty. Do you know, or maybe the chairman knows, what the projected increase in funds available to Client Security Trust Fund will be from this increase?
We would receive an additional $50,000 on an annual basis with this $50 increase.
So it's still a far cry from the demand we have.
Yes.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? Thank you. Anyone else wish to speak as to the increase in the fees for Pro Hac Vici? If there's no additional questions, then we will close the public hearing as to ADKT 452 as the Supreme Court Rule 42 as to the increase of Pro Hac Vici fees. We would then turn our attention to ADKT 453 in the matter of the amendment of Supreme Court Rule 86.5, and that is to maintain the fund pursuant to court rules as to client's security fund. On behalf of the State Bar.
Yes, Your Honor. John Shook here again. This is essentially to update the language to make it basically reflect that the client security fund is currently established, as opposed to the way the language currently reads is that it may be established in the future. It basically establishes the fund as a priority item, and that is co-equal with discipline, admission, and CLE with the State Bar.
It appears that in addition to actually establishing, there's the, is this a new section on the confidentiality, section 2?
Yeah, that is another section. We can go into that right now. The confidentiality would establish that we are to keep this information confidential, but it also clarifies that we can disclose certain information in our annual report on the website to further the function of our basically our PR role to the community. We do obtain confidential information from discipline from time to time, and we are dealing with matters that can be sensitive to clients.
You've added a provision as to subpoena powers. Is that to address what you felt was an area that wasn't fleshed out sufficiently?
Yes, Your Honor. Presently, we don't actually have subpoena power. This would allow us to issue subpoenas. We brought this out. In particular, we had a recent issue. Clients was made a claim to the fund. There was a question as to whether a payment was in fact made to the attorney. The attorney was absent, and we were unable to locate the file. The state insurance division of insurance would not release the check to us absent a subpoena, and so this would further our investigation and help us to investigate these claims more quickly.
Any additional questions? Thank you very much for the information. It's helpful for us to understand why this is being requested. Do we have anyone else who wishes to speak as to client security fund? I did not say it before, but as to 448 and 452 as well as 453, we'll take them under submission at this time. That brings us to ADKT 460 in the matter of the amendment of the Supreme Court rule. And that one, to correct myself, is as to our mediators and arbitrators. On behalf of the bar.
Good afternoon again, Your Honor. Cam Fehrenbach, President of the State Bar. I'm just going to give a brief introduction as to why the Board of Governors decided that we should seek this change in the rules, and then again, the Bar Council is here to go into the details. Of course, as President of the State Bar, I get calls from time to time from members and the public, and earlier this year, I received a call from a member, and he was very upset with the situation because there was out-of-state counsel that wanted to appear at an arbitration, and he tried to be admitted pro hoc vice and was told by the State Bar that he could not be admitted, and then the he checked with Bar Counsel and was told that if he did act in an arbitration, he'd be practicing law, unauthorized practice of law. And so I checked with Bar Counsel and with the State Bar offices, and in fact, that is the situation we've been operating. If an arbitration is not directly annexed to a court proceeding, in other words, if there's not a pending litigation where there's been an order staying the action pending arbitration, the State Bar takes the position that a person cannot be admitted under Supreme Court Rule 42 because of the existing language, which says this rule does not apply to arbitration, mediation, or alternative dispute resolution procedures in which the parties engage voluntarily or by private agreement. And then Bar Council did confirm, both under the prior administration and this one, that appearing in an arbitration and representing a client and basically litigating a case between an arbitrator, in their view, is the practice of law, which for me is kind of hard to argue with. So it seems like we're creating a very conflicting message to practitioners who want to come into the state and participate in arbitrations, mediations, or the other activities when they're not directly annexed to the court. And so we discussed it at the Board of Governors and decided, I guess there was a history here, and Mr. Turner's here to address it, as to why this was set up this way after the multi-jurisdictional practice pursuant to that process. But the fact of the matter is that as the situation currently exists and is implemented, it's really something needs to change. But that's all my remarks, unless someone has a question.
There's no questions. Thank you.
I'd ask that Mr. Clark to follow up.
Good afternoon again, Your Honor. David Clark, Bar Counsel for the State Bar. And I know that there's been opposition lodged and voiced in this regard. And I think that we may be arguing over what's happened in the past, but I think that everyone agrees we want to go to the same place in the future, and that's to allow for this, to facilitate ADR, and to facilitate clients having their own counsel when they want to resolve their matters efficiently and less expensively than going through a court proceeding. And I think after the MJP Commission in 2002 declined to extend this to private ADR, I call it, it was my prior bar counsel's opinion and mine as well, that I mean, advocating for a client in a private binding arbitration or a private non-binding is just per se the practice of law. And the question is, do you want to, if that is a practice of law, what is your authority for it? And since 42 does not extend it to ADR, then there's no such thing as a default authority to practice law. You have to have some authority. And so our quandary was that, well, we agree that it's probably a good thing to do, but there's been no finding that this practice of law is authorized. And so that's not something, a decision that the Bar Council is the one who should be making. It should be the court with its inherent powers. And so what we wanted to see, and our desire in writing this and supporting this, is to give outside attorneys a clear rule. Allow it or don't allow it, but if you allow it, then give them just a clear rule. Don't make it some sort of interpretation, you know, based upon a commission that was 8 years ago, because by definition, these lawyers aren't privy to what's going on here in the state. They just want to come in and do what's ethical. And so if you give them a clear rule, yes, you can do this, yes, you can appear as a non-Nevada licensed attorney in private ADR, we're going to allow that for all the reasons set forth in the petition, for all the policy reasons for that. But I think that it's important that the attorneys around the country who, you know, have no knowledge of what's going on in the past or any trends here, they just need a clear rule. And I think if you give them a clear rule that facilitates all the benefits of private contractual ADR, while at the same time still acknowledging that they're coming here and practicing, and there's a way for us to monitor that and know that. I know that there's been some objection made to whether or not there needs to be local counsel in this regard as opposed to a court annexed, and I don't think the state bar is particularly wed to that requirement here. I think the point here is to allow otherwise licensed attorneys in good standing who clients know well and who are comfortable with and who have had experience with come here and have the attorney of their choice. And so in that regard, for whatever however reasons we get here, the point is to give them a clear rule and a clear guideline to allow this conduct. And I'll entertain any questions you may have.
I have one, Chief. Please. Hi, this is Jim Hardesty. Did the Board of Governors distinguish between imposing this action requirement on lawyers who participate in arbitration versus the arbitrators, or lawyers who participate in mediation versus the mediator? Was it the intent, or did the Board of Governors perceive a problem to exist with the arbitrators themselves or the mediators themselves?
No, I believe that Rule of Professional Conduct 5.5, which deals with unauthorized practice of law, and I think this rule also already says that acting as an arbitrator or mediator itself is not the practice of law. It's acting as a trier of fact, and anyone can do that. And so there's already exceptions and acknowledgments in the rules that acting as the mediator or as the arbitrator or on a panel that way is not practicing law. It's, this one focuses on those who act as the advocate for the client.
Okay, thank you.
Anyone else have any questions of Mr. Clark? Hearing none, thank you, Mr. Clark.
Thank you.
Anyone else wish to speak as to this?
Yes, thank you very much, Justice Douglas, and it's a privilege to appear before the court. I'm Bill Turner. I'm the treasurer of the ADR section. I believe presently we have 92 members. I've submitted a three-page reasoning or basis for our position. It was simply submitted as an individual, but the section had a meeting yesterday and agreed to support the position that I'm taking before this court. I'd like to take this court back to the multi-jurisdictional panel and to the rule itself. We had, and I believe Justice Perry-Gary was on that, and I know Dave Clark was, and Dave Clark and I have a fundamental agreement to disagree on the interpretation of this rule. But I do remember in 2001 and 2002 with Justice Becker, we had many, many, many discussions about arbitration historically and mediation historically as being designed as a separate entity from the court system. Originally, arbitration came about as a result of merchant courts where food was spoiling because the French courts didn't have time to hear these arguments. It was designed to expedite and save costs for the parties. The same with mediation. The multi-jurisdictional panel crafted a rule to exempt arbitrations and mediations which were not annexed to the court system to be exempt from filing the pro hoc vice requirement. It was not considered by that panel to be the practice of law. And in fact, a majority of the panel said and crafted the rule 42B, which specifically says this rule, 42, practice of attorneys not admitted in Nevada, does not apply to arbitration, mediation, or alternative dispute resolution proceedings in which the parties engage voluntarily or by private agreement. Now, it was not just this panel that decided that. At the same time, the American Bar Association was meeting to discuss revisions in the professional rule of conduct. And they held under 5.5, it's cited in my brief, that it was not the practice of law if it was connected with an arbitration or mediation where the lawyer representing the client was in fact connected with some state, was licensed to practice in the state, and in fact this jurisdiction was not relevant to the case in hand. It wasn't connected with a court case here. The problem that the bar sees, and Dave's, is they've defined this as the practice of law, when the American Bar Association has said it was not, the multi-jurisdictional panel considered it not to be, and the case they cited for support of their position that it is, which is Comar versus Fremantle Media, North America, an Illinois case that came out in 2003, is highly, highly helpful to this court. Essentially, from page 5 to 8, it defines what the practice of law is, defines the history of arbitration and mediation, cites to the American Bar Association professional rules of conduct, and says, no, an arbitrator who practices in the state is not required to follow pro hoc vici, and is not required, is not conducting the practice of law. Now, obviously, there are more elements to that than this, but the fact of the matter is, in that particular case, one of those, if the arbitrator had not been admitted in that state, was sued, as well as the party moved to dismiss the case because the arbitrator was not a lawyer in that state, nor admitted to practice, nor had he filed pro hoc vici. They, in this particular case, went through the history of arbitration, the purpose of arbitration, And the reasoning why this should not be subject to any type of jurisdiction by an out-of-state court for or regulated by that state when it was not, in fact, involving that law. For instance, many arbitrations in Nevada simply come here because it's a good place to come. It has nothing to do with Nevada law. It has nothing to do with Nevada courts. But it does protect the right of the client to have his own counsel. And that counsel would certainly know more than local counsel. And certainly, as I said before, why burden the courts here with additional paperwork, additional filings, and with the requirement of local counsel and his cost? And this rule requires that. 42 now requires it. That's why we moved to exempt it. We specifically said arbitrators are not subject to that rule unless it's connected to a court case. That's the same rule for the American Bar Association. It's the same rule with the American Arbitration Association. I agree with Dave. And I agree that we should have a clear rule. And it's our position, the section's position, that that rule is very clear. It simply says here that arbitrators and mediators are not subject to 42. If the parties engage voluntarily or by private agreement. And historically, that's why we did that, to save them cost of money. I'll give the court an example. I don't want to take up, I know your time is precious, but I had a case in California. And the case was actually the contract called for the arbitration to be here because the professional corporation knew that many people who might be elderly, who may have been defrauded, could not afford to come here. Nor could they afford to have local counsel here, nor could they afford to file the pro hoc vice fees. In that particular case, the individual who was 88 years old was represented by counsel in California almost on a pro bono basis. I was asked to do this as a favor to the American Arbitration Association for $750 for 2 days. That's pretty much pro bono. And when I tried to hold it here, the State Bar informed me that counsel from San Diego representing the corporation had said that we couldn't hold the arbitration here unless that counsel filed pro hoc vici, and that counsel associating local counsel to be present in that arbitration. Well, he couldn't afford to do that on behalf of his client, and his client had no money. So I had to fly to California, and I did it there pro bono. And it was a good feeling because I protected that man's rights and the rights to be represented by his counsel. And that's what we're asking for here. I don't see how we should ask the courts, when they have nothing to do with this case or those cases, to require a pro hoc vici filing. That's just another large amount of paperwork, large burden on the court, and supervision. Also, why should the State Bar require under Rule 42 local counsel to be present? And why should they have to have jurisdiction? Usually counsel from out of state who conduct these arbitrations are extremely they're senior counsel, they're regulated in their own state, they're subject to discipline by their own bar, and they are representing their client's best interest. I think for those reasons, the section of the ADR, and from my point of view, we should not take away what the multi-jurisdictional panel worked so hard to protect. The right of client be represented by counsel without having to pay all those additional fees. Now, if this is a court case here in Nevada, I agree. Then it's the practice of law. But where the case may resolve itself in New York, where the New York law is applicable, where the attorneys are from New York, and they come to Las Vegas because the contract says that's where the hearing will be held, why subject them to more rules, more cost? It's just not effective, nor historically fair, nor necessary. The rule itself, I thought, was very clear. It simply says, not admitted attorneys who are representing counsel or representing clients in private actions, private arbitrations or mediations, are not required to file a pro hoc vici. And if they weren't required to file pro hoc vici, I doubt if the multi-jurisdictional panel intended them to come in then and then be guilty of violating the practice of law without a without an appeal to the courts. We created that rule so they didn't have to go to the courts, so they could practice here and represent their clients without having to appear before the courts or register with the bar. And I recall some of the justices and some of the other people on my panel agreeing with that, and the majority that Dave has pointed out historically said, no, we are not going to extend the rules of pro hoc vici to these type of counsel who are subject to other states' rules and regulations where it's a private, contractually private mediation or arbitration. So I would ask the court to leave the rule as it is or to change the rule that's simply to say that it's a very simple clarification. Under 42B, 1B, that the rule does not apply to arbitration, mediation, or alternative dispute resolution procedures which the parties engage voluntarily or by private agreement, and shall not constitute the practice of law in Nevada. So that no attorney reading this could ever question that they were required to file the pro hoc vici fees, are required to register with the state bar, or, and if you read the whole Rule 42, go through a whole number of licensings and permissions of local counsel and other applications before they can even come in and represent their client. The section, and I myself believe that arbitration is such a unique animal, and its whole design is to speed up the system and to avoid burdening the courts with jurisdiction or supervision, that this rule, though I thought it was very clear, if it's subject to that interpretation by state bar counsel, should be made very clear by this court that those practitioners in private arbitrations or mediations are not subject to those rules under 42B1 or 42.1B and should be allowed to represent their clients without those burdens. Thank you.
I need the citation to the ABA opinion on RPC 5.5 that you said holds in essence.
It's 5.5. It says Model Rules of Professional Conduct 2004, and it is, I think it's 5.5. Let's see. Yeah, it's 5.5. Called Unauthorized Practice of Law, Multi-Jurisdictional Practice of Law. That's the section of the 2004 Model Rules of Professional Conduct adopted in 2004. And, Your Honor, this multi-jurisdictional panel did an extensive investigation of other state rules and laws, including we talked to the American Bar Association and tried to model our rules to some extent on their rule, and also tried to model our rule, which, by the way, the Illinois case came out in 2003. All of us were talking to different states, and we had a committee, in fact, I was not on that committee, who gave us a sense of what states did as to the practice of arbitration and mediation and how they handled that practice.
Because wouldn't it make sense that there be a cross-reference if there to 5.5 in 42, as you suggest, to say that it's not the practice of law within RPC 5.5.
Right, but we cannot add the words pro hoc vici, and yes, I agree with you, absolutely. The one thing that the ABA 5.5 does say is if a state does require a filing pro hoc vici, then this rule is not applicable. But where the state does not require, and that's why we adopted the rule, to say it does not apply. And we do not have to file a pro hoc vici in the state if you're conducting private mediations or arbitrations.
Mr. Turner.
But I agree with you.
Sorry, were you done, Justice Pickering?
I was. Thank you very much. That's helpful.
Mr. Turner, two questions. By the language you suggest, do we then not subject the lawyer, the non-Nevada licensed lawyer, to or exempt them from rules of professional conduct, even if they're representing a Nevada resident?
No, I don't think so.
You're not intending to do that, are you?
Your Honor, I don't think that we exempt them from the rules of professional conduct. The American Bar Association rules do not. They're certainly subject to the rules of professional conduct, but they're not practicing law if they're, in fact, a member of another state. If they're a member of this state, go ahead. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
It sounds as if one of the concerns that President Fehrenbach was relating to us by the lawyer who raised the issue is that he or she may be on the opposite side of a lawyer who's representing a Nevada resident and may be having some problems with that lawyer. Does the State Bar have jurisdiction to discipline the non-Nevada licensed lawyer even with this language?
I would think that the State Bar, that's not something that I would think that they would, or at least refer it for reference to the other state where he's licensed. I mean, there is a series of requirements for any attorney practicing in any jurisdiction to be subject to that state's discipline, and that Nevada resident certainly can refer it to the State Bar in the state where, in fact, that lawyer is a resident. He's certainly subject to that jurisdiction. Whether or not this state wants to exercise jurisdiction over an out-of-state attorney who's doing it in a private mediation or arbitration is another matter.
Well, my concern is that we these rules are in large part to protect citizens of Nevada from problems that may develop from representation by unlicensed lawyers. If we declare in this rule that participation in arbitration or mediation is not the practice of law, I become concerned that that lawyer is not subject to discipline by our state bar, even if they have committed an act of violation of the rules of professional conduct against a Nevada citizen.
Well, I understand your point, Your Honor, but that would apply, again, then to AAA rules with regard to representatives representing individuals in private arbitrations or mediations, and certainly we can't subject them to our state rules with regards to the practice of law. And it seems to me that they have, our Nevada citizens have significant protection with regards to the ABA rules of conduct and the state in which that lawyer has jurisdiction, and I'm sure our state bar has the ability to refer and coordinate discipline with any other state where this person is licensed. Now, whether or not we could exercise jurisdiction if he's not practicing law, I still think we could exercise ethics and professional responsibility.
I'd like to hear from Mr. Clark on the question I've asked, but I really appreciate your input, Mr. Turner. And one additional question. Do you have the site on Comar?
I do. I hope I do. I have the whole case here, but hopefully you printed it out. If not, it's Comar.
Justice Cherry, I'd like to make a comment, Mr. Turner. I don't think you need that language about you're not practicing law, because that's not true. I think the rule as written is clear. Can you hear me?
Go ahead. Oh, okay.
Mr. Turner?
Can you hear me, Bill? It's Mike Cherry.
Oh, yes, Mike. I'm sorry.
Listen,
I can hear you.
What I'm worried about is you're doing something that's not broken. In other words, you're trying to fix something that's not broken. I think as the rule stated that ADR is exempt is good enough. We don't have to say that a person is not practicing law. What's in favor of your position is historically with National Association of Security Dealers, where people come in for arbitrations and they bring their own attorneys, and also union and management agreements. Over the years when I did culinary stuff and operating engineers and Teamsters, certainly both sides were bringing in lawyers from out of state to do arbitrations because they were the lawyers for the union and for the hotels. So I think historically you're in a good shape. I don't think you need that language. The question is, do we exempt it or do we not exempt it? If we do exempt it,
I agree with you, Justice.
If we do exempt it, we don't need the language.
All right, and Justice Chair, I absolutely agree with that. I would like to leave the language alone. That I absolutely agree with you on that. And if you leave it alone and say we exempt it, that's fine with me. That would be the perfect way to go, so we don't have the problem you just mentioned. I absolutely agree with you. Comar, you know, Your Honor, and I bet Dave has it because it's on page 2 of his brief, but I have Comar. Okay. I have a site, but I Googled it, so it's a Google site.
Dave, do you have it? It's in the petition.
It's in the petition. It's Colmar, C-O-L-M-E-R, L-T-D versus Fremantle Media North American. And the petition, I think it's on page 2, isn't it, Dave?
Page 3.
Has a citation. I just Googled the name, Your Honor, and got that, but I did not get the final legal citation. Dave had that already. I didn't think it was necessary. Let me see here. Here's the petition. It is page. It is page 2, Colmar. It's 801 Northeast 2nd, 1017, Illinois App Court, 2003. And there's another case cited also, Super Audio Limited Partnership versus Windstar Radio Products, 844 Northeast 2nd, 246, Mass, 2006. And, you know, does that help, Justice Hardesty?
Yeah, I found it while you were reading it, so thank you very much.
Thank you.
I overlooked it earlier.
All right. Are there any other?
Thank you very much, Mr. Turner. If there's anyone else who wishes to speak, and then we'll have Mr. Clark come up.
Justice Douglas, thank you, and thank you to the court. It's always a privilege to appear before you.
Is there anyone else? And if there's not, if Mr. Clark would come forward and respond.
Thank you, Your Honor. It's just a few points, and since this is a public hearing, I'd like to make sure that the record is clear, because I don't think we're seeking different aims here. We're seeking the same goal. Under Supreme Court Rule 99, this court has jurisdiction, discipline jurisdiction, over any attorney practicing law in the state, whether specially admitted or not. You practice law here, you are subject to the Supreme Court's jurisdiction. Arizona, California, Utah, wherever, you come here and practice law, you're subject to our jurisdiction. And I think under this court's holding in Pioneer Title or in Ray Glenn Lerner, discipline of Glenn Lerner, this is clearly the practice of law. And I think it's improvident to abrogate that jurisdiction and that regulatory authority.
Well, that was my point, Mr. Clark. If we insert language in this rule that says that it's not the practice of law, we've reversed the effect of SCR 99.
Exactly. And I would just point out a couple other points. Under our Rule of Professional Conduct 5.5, the unauthorized practice of law, it said it's a policy shifting that says you will not be deemed to have engaged in the unauthorized practice of law under subparagraph 6, 7. The lawyer is acting as an arbitrator, mediator, or impartial third party in alternative dispute resolution proceedings. So the actual arbitrator is not subject to any claims of the unauthorized practice of law. Briefly, just to make reference to, and I have the reports of the multi-jurisdictional commission from November of 2001. If I could just read this very briefly, and I won't take up too much of the court's time. In the executive summary, the commission says, in general, admission to practice law in Nevada should be continued to be predicated on the taking and passing of the Nevada bar examination. Nevada lawyers should bear primary responsibility for legal services performed within the state. And to the specific issue, and this is very brief, the commission considered whether pro hoc vice mechanism should also apply to mediations and arbitrations. Considerable debate was had on this topic, with the majority of the commission reaching a consensus that SCR 42 should be applied only to court annexed or statutory required mediations and arbitrations based on a recognition of the contractual nature of private mediations and arbitrations, as well as the balancing of potential harm to a Nevada resident versus the right of that citizen to have an attorney or representative of their choice. A sizable minority of the commission concluded that the pro hoc vice requirements should apply to all mediations and arbitrations, as the same client protections, i.e., the potential harm of a non-Nevada attorney giving legal advice to a Nevada resident, would apply, and that the pressure to reach a final result in a private arbitration or mediation makes such mechanism as important as court annex or statutory required ones. I don't think they came to a definitive answer, but this is sort of what they came up with. They agreed not to extend it. And I think that sort of leaves it open to interpretation. And I think that the purpose of this is not to leave it open to somebody's interpretation. It may not be here in 5 years or 10 years or whenever, but to set a clear rule. And I think you can accomplish that by just saying, look, we're going to allow you to do this, and the pro hoc vice mechanism can either be through the state bar, like government agencies sometimes do, doesn't have to go through the courts, or however the court wants to fashion it, but I think a clear rule allowing an advocate of a client in an ADR to appear, either pro vice, and however mechanism the court wants to set that up, I think that's important to give them clear guidance. So I don't think it's necessary to say this is not the practice of law. It is the practice of the law. However, it's not the unauthorized practice of law because we hereby authorize it in this situation. And without having any further questions, I'll be happy to answer those.
Any additional questions of Mr. Clark? Mr. Clark, thank you very much.
Thank you, and thanks, Court.
Anyone else who wishes to come forward on this issue? We'll close then the public hearing as to ADKT 460 as the Supreme Court Rule 42 sub 1. Matter will stand here. I thank the individuals who appeared on this matter today. Rules referring to Pro Hoc Vici, client security, arbitration, mediation that were covered this day are important to our practice here in the state of Nevada. With that, these matters will stand submitted.